All right, I am here, joined once again by my friend Julie Mastrini. How are you doing today or tonight, ma'am?
I'm doing well. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell my days from nights the way things are going, so just forgive me.
It's okay. I get it. Yeah. It's a weird time of year.
Well, I'm the only driver at work right now. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you're working a lot.
I'm working as much as they'll let me, pretty much.
That sounds like a lot.
It's a lot more than I'm used to working anymore. I'm old. I used to work a lot more than this, but now I'm getting old and my body's like, I don't like this anymore.
So like what is your range of distance? Like, do you travel
100 miles?
Okay.
In any direction. Yeah. So from Orange, because we're right here on the Gulf, right at the border of Louisiana. I'll go almost to Lafayette at times. I'll go to Toledo Bend. Tomorrow I'm going to Cameron, Louisiana. We go all over the place, but it's like, it's within 100 miles.
Okay, man, that would stress me out. It took me like 10 years to become not a stressful driver, but I still don't like it. Like every time I get on an airplane, I remind myself that driving is less safe than being on an airplane. Mm-hmm. But then every time I'm in a car, I'm thinking about how driving is less safe than being on an airplane. And it just freaks me out. You know, I don't know. I couldn't do what you do. I'd have too much anxiety.
Man, I've done it for 21 years. It's just like second nature now. I just,
yeah,
just go and do. And so, I mean, things happen still, you know. I was stuck in the mud yesterday. So, you know, things do happen, but
okay.
Other than that, you know, nothing too bad.
So you just do it.
Yep. It's just what I do. Just can't let that stuff bother you. So like anything else, when you're engaging in anything, you're going to fail and things are going to go wrong. And
yeah,
you just got to kind of shrug it off and go on and do it again.
I was thinking about this today, actually, because I was thinking about like things not being perfect and how frustrating that is. But also, it's the only way that we can grow is if things aren't perfect. Like, God allows that to grow us, right? So, like, there's no need for virtues like patience or whatever it may be if things are just, like, good all the time, you know? Like, actually, I've been cranky up until this year about Orthodox fasting. Like, just didn't understand it, didn't want to do it, like, cranky about it. And then my friend sent me a clip, and it was some guy, I don't actually know who he is, but he has a big podcast, but he was saying, like, when you're fasting, it shows you who you really are. Because it's like, when you're feeling deprived or, like, hungry or, like, whatever, like, who are you under those conditions? Who are you when things aren't perfect? And, like, that's what really shows what you're made of. So after I heard that, I was kind of like, oh, that's interesting. That makes me like actually feel motivated to fast now after like years of not getting it, not knowing like why I should do it. And even asking priests, but why do we fast? They'd be like, oh, it's good for you. I'm like, why is it good for me? Like, I need more substance to the response than that, or I'm not going to like, or I'm just going to rebel because I have this rebellious nature, you know? So,
well, I don't know. Well, I'm terrible too. Like, Lent for me is pretty easy. I mean, I'll still have a couple of beers when I get home from work and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's easy. I'm like, all right, then this is what I got to do for the next 40 days. This is what I got to do.
Huh.
Where it gets me is in between fasts, when it's like Wednesday and Friday, because I don't know what day it is half the time. So I just get up and I go about my day. Because I've been driving truck for so long, it's so ingrained in me to find something easy to eat while I'm driving.
Yeah.
90% of the time it's a burger. Uh-huh. And so I'll get halfway through the burger and I'll be like, oh, it's Wednesday.
Yep. That has happened to me.
Okay.
Like, only times. So I'm like, I don't know what day of the week it is until I'm halfway through my meal. And then it dawns on me at that moment. So yeah, I've had that too.
Right.
Cause you get into your routine. right? And it's hard to remember to make a new routine. Yeah. And then I don't know, like not eating meat. I was very like, it took me years to figure out how to eat a healthy diet because I grew up with like a, you know, boomer parents that thought that like
hamburger helper.
Yeah, like processed junk was cool. And I ate a lot of junk growing up and a lot of sugar. And like, so it took me years to figure out like, okay, meat's good. Butter is good. Like fat is good. Animal fat. And to figure all that out. So I got really resentful when I found out about Orthodox fasting because I was like, wait a minute. It took me forever to figure out how to eat. And now I have to figure out how to eat vegan. You know, like I was like cranky about it. So,
but I got to send you the cookbook my wife's put together for fasting. I got to send it to you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is now that I'm building up recipes, I'm less cranky about it. So it's just, but that takes time, you know? So, and I still like, I've made this like vegan egg salad like twice in the last 7 days because it's good, but it's got like tofu in it and stuff. But it's like the first vegan recipe I've found that like I actually like. So I just need more of those and then I'll do it. But yeah, it's, I needed the reason why it was like good to do. And then also just that would give me the motivation to figure it out. But when I didn't have that piece, I was like, I'm just mad about this. Why do we do this? You know?
Well, she started making the shake this year. It's really good. It's bananas, dates, raw cashews, raw almonds, raw pistachios, and almond milk.
Oh, yeah.
It's perfect for breakfast. I'll be drinking my coffee. I'll drink a glass of it. It'll hold me over till almost 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, nice. Yeah. The protein is the issue. I was not getting enough protein and then I'd be like, I was in church last Wednesday for a pre-sanctified liturgy. And I was like, I am starving. Like I did not get enough protein today. And I feel like I'm going to pass out, you know, You have to figure out the substitute. So it's a learning curve. But even the spiritual side of like why we do it, it's starting to click. It's like the last thing in Orthodoxy that's clicked. Well, aside from like, you know, the basis, as far as the basics go. And I have Catholic friends when I was raised Catholic and they just don't, they're like, oh yeah, no meat or no meat on Fridays, right? That's it all year. And I'm like, yeah, Orthodox are pretty hardcore. And sometimes I'm even like, if I think there's somebody who might be interested in Orthodoxy, like that, I don't lead with how much we fast because I think to someone who's not used to it, they might be like turned off by it. Like, oh my God, that sounds really hard. Why would I want to do that? Like the other, I lead with like the other aspects of like what I like about Orthodoxy. The fasting is usually the last thing I discuss with that. I think it can be a little.
Well, and typically priests are usually pretty good about working with people and figuring out what their current diet is in order to try to help them. Hey, like, why don't you try it without this or try it without that and take it one step at a time.
Yeah. My priest has been very like, don't rush into it. Don't try to do the whole fast all at once. Like go easy on yourself. Like that was what he always said. So, and that's good. It's good advice. Cause it is a lot. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, Catholic Easter is and Protestant Easter, Western Easter is on Sunday. I don't know if you have people in your life who are like celebrating this weekend. But now I, you know, go to my, like they're done with Lent just about, you know, it's weird.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know any Catholics, like not, I mean, I know some, but I'm not familiar with their season or how they go through this stuff. And Protestants don't really recognize Lent. They're just kind of like, yeah, Good Friday, it's Easter. Have fun. Goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. For us, it's like a whole bigger thing, which I think is great because then like when Pascha finally comes, it's like huge, you know, it's like so much more meaningful when you've fasted and it's been a long time. And like that period of restriction makes the holiday so much more big and vibrant. It's like my priest said that he converted after seeing a Pascha service and I get why.
Oh yeah.
So like
elaborate.
Yeah. You know, and then
my dad is actually being baptized this Saturday.
Really?
Yes.
That's awesome.
So your influence.
Unfortunately.
No, that's awesome.
He could have found a better influence.
Lord God. No, that's wow.
Yeah.
How cool.
Yeah. So, and it's funny because I started thinking about this topic, and we're going to get into the topic here shortly. Oh, yeah. I started thinking about this topic, and then I discovered my mom is kind of in the same place. And I'm like, oh, interesting.
As your dad, you mean?
No, as the topic we're about to discuss.
Okay, sweet. That'll be good.
Yeah.
I want to hear about that because I have thoughts too, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, well, let's dive in. So what Julie and I had decided to talk on was the community within the Orthodox. And one of the things I heard was a priest talking about how men are more attracted to the intellectual side. Now, obviously, we're grading on a bell curve. This isn't going to go for every man. It's not going to go for every woman. But men are typically attracted to the intellectual side, whereas women are more attracted to the community side of things. In that, so it's very easy, and it explains a lot about why you see so many young men joining Orthodoxy, because it's so easy to just get intellectually stimulated and stay engaged. But building relationships, that takes some time. That takes a while. Now, the way this priest described it, and I apologize, I can't remember who it was that I heard say this, but the way he describes it, he says, right about the time the man runs out of stamina from this initial surge into Orthodoxy, he's been dragging his wife along with him, and she's beginning to build relationships. So when he runs out of stamina, then she's leading the race, and she's pulling him through until he rebuilds that stamina back up. Then they eventually come to a place where they both level out and they find their place within the church.
Cool. But
building relationships within the Orthodox Church is difficult. And I was lucky in this case because my wife is atheist and it is just me. I was able to do both and be intellectually stimulated and build these relationships. And it's because the Antiochians are known as the more hospitable of the Orthodox, right? But if you come, like if you enter into a Greek circle specifically, they're notorious for being very difficult to penetrate and to build these relationships.
Yeah.
Right. But once you get in, then you're in for life. There's no getting out now. Yeah. So
there's no getting it.
So have you recognized kind of the struggle to build these relationships?
No, I had a totally different experience. Like, okay, I'll say this. When I the first Orthodox church I ever went to was in rural Pennsylvania in a dying town, and it was super unfriendly. And I was like, I'm never becoming Orthodox because this is the most unfriendly place I've ever been. And, but I had also been to Catholic churches that weren't friendly. Protestant churches always were friendly, but the Catholic ones really weren't. And it was one of the things that was happening for me is I was looking for a community, like first and foremost. And that's what brought me back to Christianity, because I realized, because I tried to have, I'm going a little bit farther back here, but I guess the context is irrelevant. I tried to form communities around different things. So like, I'm a fire dancer. So I tried to have that be my community and my like church, so to speak. And that was insufficient because these people were often like polyamorous and doing a lot of drugs, and like the behaviors weren't good. And there was like a lack of like trust and let's say generative behavior. It was degenerative behavior. Then I tried to have my community be this psychedelic art church in upstate New York. And that was all New Age. And they were like, oh, all religions are the same. This is a spiritual center, but we're not going to elevate one religion over another. It's like all the same. And then I realized that that place, the community also had the same problems of like people weren't having kids. People didn't bring their kids to this church. There was drug use. There was polyamory, all that stuff. So I was like, okay, I need a Christ-centered community. So that is what brought me back to Christianity in a big way, was like the morality and the community aspect, the expectations on the members of the community. So I started exploring Christian churches, and I found that the Catholic churches didn't have strong communities that I could, at least not that I could penetrate. Like, I'd go to a Catholic church and nobody would even say hi to me. Like, I was new and nobody would say hi. And then the Protestant churches, like, they kind of would. But what ended up happening is my friend brought me to an Anglican church, and they had a coffee hour, and it was Anglican Catholic. So they're a very small denomination. Mm-hmm. It's not Anglican Protestant. There's a difference. Mm-hmm. And they had a coffee hour, and everybody was super nice, and they like putting whiskey in their coffee, and like, I don't know, it was just like kind of fun. And I was like, that's cool. So I started calling the Catholic churches, and I was like, do you guys do coffee hour? And they like thought I was nuts. They were like, I don't know what you're talking about. So finally I go to an Orthodox church, the one I currently attend. And it was like immediately, like everybody was like, hi, oh my gosh, here are some books. Like, come to our coffee hour. Like, everybody was super, super friendly. Mm-hmm. So once I found like my Orthodox church, except for that one blip of the dying one in the rural town, once I found my Orthodox church, I feel like it was very, very easy to make connections and to build relationships. And that was what like immediately sucked me in and like kept me in Orthodoxy. So I don't know, but it could be because my church has a lot of old people and they were really excited for young people to be there. It could have been that. But I've also had the experience you said where like I've also traveled a lot and I've spent time at Greek churches and I felt like I couldn't really break in or like it wasn't as like, like as friendly or like I didn't feel like I was a part of their thing or could be.
Like so, cliquish.
Yeah. It was like all the converts would hang out, and then all the Greek families would hang out, you know? And it was like, so, but then like, I don't know, but I feel like you're definitely correct though, that men tend to be drawn in through the like intellectual aspect, especially if they're people who are into history. A lot of men are really into history, I think, in a way that like women aren't. So like once you start,
we spend a lot of time thinking about the Roman Empire.
Yeah. And so, right. And well, like, and as a woman, I don't like quite get it. I mean, it's cool. And so I think if you're like a guy and you're looking into history and the history of the church, you end up at Orthodoxy through like, I think there are a lot of men who are kind of like autistically into history and theology and they end up at Orthodoxy that way. But a lot of women I know end up back at Christianity or Orthodoxy because they need a healthy community. So that was the case for me.
That is funny you say that because the first book I ever read that was Orthodox was Religion of the Apostles by Father Stephen DeYoung. And the second book I read was Rock and Sand by Father Josiah Trenum.
Oh, I don't know the Trenum one.
Oh, it's great. It goes through the history of the church as far as like, from the Great Schism on to Protestantism. So it covers all of that.
Oh, interesting.
It's so good.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So if you're a dude and you're like thinking that way, you like tunnel your way back to Orthodoxy. I tunneled my way back to Orthodoxy through trying on different communities. Seriously. It was like, oh, are the circus people in San Francisco my community? Doesn't quite feel right. Are the Catholics my community? Doesn't quite feel right. Are the Protestants my community? Doesn't quite feel right. Like, and you know, and then I found the Orthodox community and I was like, this is the thing. Got it. Okay. Here we go. And it's centered around because it, I don't know. I just had the sense that it needed to be like centered around the truth and like the proper thing. All communities have issues. I'm not saying the Orthodox communities are perfect. But I remember when I was like trying to make like the circus community my thing, it was like I could sense there was like something hollow about the connections because we were all like activity partners and we weren't partners on this journey of like a larger truth or like sanctifying our souls. Like it was just about like dance and prop manipulation. That's what we call it. So it was too hollow. So then the way that people were treating each other wasn't like quite right. I didn't feel like people were really there for each other in the way that I felt was right. In fact, they were like actively against each other. Cause if you're in like a polyamorous community, like you're all hurting each other, you know, you're like sleeping with each other's partner or whatever the heck. So yeah, like I think if women can sense that there's something off in like the American culture with just the degeneracy and how people behave. But I don't know. Have you heard from women or anybody that it's hard to make like community connections or like relationships in Orthodoxy? That hasn't been my experience.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily hard. I think what I've witnessed with the women that I've encountered is that they see how quickly the man is attracted to this.
Oh.
And because it's so much easier to dial in on the intellect than it is to dial in on a personal relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like deep ingrained personal relationships take time,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't take a long time to get somebody a light to flick on and you'd be like, wait a minute, I see something. There's something I got to know about this. And
yeah.
And so they pursue that. So I think what I've witnessed is that it takes longer to build the community. And it's not to say that people are rude, but people right. can be cliquish. They get comfortable with their in-group and
yeah.
they remain within that in-group.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I always said was, when I got out of the military, I didn't miss the military, but I missed the brotherhood.
I've heard that from a lot of ex-military people.
And I joined, I prospected with several motorcycle clubs looking for that, like that just in building those relationships. It takes a long time to mm-hmm. get there because you're not going through the stresses that you are in a military. And
those bond you, the stress bonds you. It's like why fraternities haze, because stress bonds people together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so if you're going into the Orthodox community, let's say you're a convert going into a community of cradle Orthodox, they're not going to feel the same stresses that you feel. They're not going to have those same experiences. So that relatability is going to be a little bit more difficult to find. Because yeah. they're not going to have that same kind of event take place in their life. So finding that correct church that kind of has the right amount of cradle Orthodox and the right amount of converts
yeah.
is important, I think.
Yeah, it's true. I think I tend to connect more quickly with converts because I mean, I can share a story with them about how I came to find the church and then ask them for their story. And there's often like similarities, especially if they were like, I like to call them COVID converts, like people who are coming into the church around like 2020. Mm-hmm. There's like, oh, were you noticing all this crazy stuff in the world that I was noticing? And like that means right. the existence of evil and like
yeah.
the church. So I can connect with those folks, but also like I do have a lot of friends at my church that are cradle. So after a while, I think that kind of like evens out.
Right.
But I've definitely found like more to maybe talk about with converts because their journey kind of there's more like it's like you said almost it's like we've like been through war to get there.
Mm.
So that I can like connect with them on that. And my closest friends are people that were kind of on that journey with me. Like people that when I came into the church, I came in with my best friend, my twin sister and my best friend's husband. So we were like, and then a year later, another one of my best friends, and then a year later, another best friend. So it's kind of like, we're all kind of really close in the timeline of our conversions. So I feel much more, I feel a lot of kinship with them, but I think like, I don't know, demographics are interesting because I do think that my church was very hungry for young people. And so when we came in, we brought a bunch of other like young people, millennials And they were like so grateful for that, that there was just such a sense of warmth. And everybody was like interested in who we were. We were like newcomers and all this stuff. And they knew their church needed like new life and people to help. And so that was good. But I think I've been to churches where, and I've spent a lot of time at like very large churches where I feel like I'm not needed. And there's already like they're good. Like they have a ton of people and like, there's not as much for me to do or something. Like I kind of am grateful that the community of my church was so like hungry for new people because I feel like I can be useful there. And I've been to big giant churches in Austin where I was just like, I don't know if I'm needed here. You know, like I had this sense it wasn't where I belonged.
Mm-hmm.
And which is fine. Like, but yeah, I think there's also like myself and my best friend and my sister, we were really thinking about the concept of atomization in America, where like Americans are super individualistic and it's very easy to just like go to work and then come home and be in front of your screen and go to bed and like do that forever. And like how we've kind of lost a social life, like there's just been a sort of stripping out. It's like that book Bowling Alone. Do you know that book?
Mm-hmm.
It was a book that I think came out, it might have been like the 90s or something, but it was about how America has had this decay of civic institutions. Americans used to be part of different like institutions,
like Moose clubs and
clubs. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we don't like have that anymore, which I blame mass media, but who knows? It could be increased diversity does that. There are studies that show that the more diverse your society is, the less people engage in civic life. There's lower social trust. That's like a total thought crime that you're not allowed to say, but it's true. So
I would think inflating the dollar too, and creating a situation where, two working parents was a necessity.
Yes.
It could erode.
Yes.
Because the moms don't get together during the day anymore. And
yep. Plan stuff. And the women could like plan the dinner parties and plan the social events on the weekends. And now like everybody has to work. I planned a party a month ago. It was a lot of work. If I'd like had a child, I don't think I would have been able to like do it, or it would have been like a lot harder. I don't know. I was just like, this is a ton of work just to have like 30 people over at my house, you know, it was worth it. And everybody was so like enriched by the experience, but it's not like that's happening every weekend because most of us don't have time to like do something like that, to plan something like that every weekend to make sure everybody has food and there's drink and like the house is clean and everything and you can actually host. So yeah, anyway, my friends and I were, the issue of atomization and the like sort of death of like social life in general was a huge catalyst for me and my friends actually getting into church life. And it's been great because it has really opened up. Now, like most of my friends that I'm close with are people I met through church communities. Not like they go to my church, but maybe they go to like a neighboring church or a church an hour away or like even an hour and a half away. But we like know each other and we all keep in touch. And like, that's been my social network now. So it's much more enriching too, because it's like Christ-centered. So everyone's trying to focus on being a better person. And that's who you want your community to be, you know?
Well, let's dig into this a little bit more, because you had mentioned that you had joined these other communities. You were looking for that sense of community, that sense of belonging. And you found it with the Orthodox Church. But can we like try to compare and contrast in kind of more specific ways as to how that manifested itself within your life?
Yeah. Like, you mean how the need for that manifested, or
do you notice like different character, different type of honor, different type of dependability? Like, are these things obvious to you?
Yeah, it was like, it felt like those other communities, people were very focused on, I don't know, like just themselves. Like there wasn't this sense of like helping each other out or like doing what was good for the other. It was all about like the self. It was like self-worship was like a part of those communities, and they were breaking down and malfunctioning. Like I mentioned how a lot of those communities, people were very okay with open relationships and non-monogamy. And that's because the way that they think is like that freedom is the highest value, right? And I'm just going to like freedom. Like we should all be free. We shouldn't hold each other back. Like the way to serve all of our highest good is to give each other as much freedom as possible. And it's like, actually in a community, when you're duty bound, like you're not as free as you were, right? If there's a young kid at church who like doesn't have a car and needs help getting to work, like you help him get to, maybe you give him a ride, right? So you're not as free, right? Because you have a duty to other people. So it's kind of like the communities that I was in, I was noticing that like the character of the people in those communities wasn't like actually about serving each other. It was just about serving the self. And that's also why you get the drug use too, because it's all about like me feeling good kind of thing. And they don't have like sacraments and stuff. So their sacrament is like dropping acid and dancing, you know? So it was that. And it was just like all the morals were kind of upside down. The other thing was like sort of the concept of like tough love. Like I noticed that in these communities, if somebody was like hurting themselves actively, like I had a friend who was addicted to meth, and I was like, she was always needing financial help. She needed me to like buy her tampons and buy her a train ticket. And like, she was like, we would help her get a job, and then she would do drugs and miss work and get fired. And so after many months or even like a year or more, I don't even know how long it was, of helping her by giving her things, I was like, I need to tell her that I will take her to rehab, but I'm not providing any more like financial support, because she needs to like hit rock bottom and see what her life is and help herself. And that's kind of the tough love approach, right? Like, and the other people in this community did not understand. They thought I was just being heartless. And I was like, no, to be loving to her, there needs to be a boundary where she learns how to stand on her own.
Well, she's not getting any healing from continuing. Right.
Yeah. We were enabling her. And I was like, we need to stop enabling her and give her, you know, a final kind of an ultimatum, but like, you know, go get help for your drug use. We're not going to give you money anymore. And they were like, no, she just needs love. She just needs support. Like this, their idea of compassion was very different than mine. Right. Like my idea of helping her was to help her to become self-sufficient, be able to help herself. I knew that none of us were going to be able to like do that deep work for her. So it was like stuff like that. And then also, like I said, the non-monogamy hurts other people, because if you're just free to like sleep around with anybody, you're like hurting other people. Right. Like I had a friend who was like dating a guy and they were open. And they went on a trip, he went on a trip without her, and he was like flirting with some other girl there, or like cuddling with her and something, and she was hurt. But nobody in her community would have kept his behavior in line by being like, yo, dude, don't do that. Think about your girl. Like, what are you doing? None of them would have kept his behavior in check, because in their minds, they're all free and do whatever you want. It's all good, right? So I was like, I need a community with like a moral code where we place boundaries on each other's behavior and enforce those boundaries. Does that make sense?
It does. And yeah. I think part of it was you were raised Catholic. And so you had this instilled within you.
Yes.
Whereas many of these people didn't grow up with the same moral like boundaries.
Exactly. And so we just had, there was like this deep disconnect where I was like, this isn't who I am. And this isn't the type of community I want to be in. And I think this stuff is wrong, but I was having trouble connecting with people because we were just coming from a different place. And I was like, and I had that metric of comparison where I'm from a small Catholic town where like people don't act this way. And also like, even like the virtue of working hard, right? Like you sacrifice some of your freedom to work, to like make money and not be like a mooch on the people around you. Like there was a lot of that going on. These are like And people who are familiar with like the EDM Burning Man circles will know, we even have like words for people where it's, we would call them, oh my God, what was, there's a slang term for like people that like mooch off of other people in the community and they don't really bums. Like their, and their thing. That's what, that is. Was it a wook? I think it was a wook, but I've been out of it for years. So now I don't remember the slang, but yeah, just like people that would kind of mooch off other people and not really like work very hard or like uphold their end of things. That was really common. Whereas in like a Christian community, since the fundamental like thing with Christianity is like picking up your cross and bearing it, all that comes with that is like a sense of duty and responsibility to each other, even if it means sacrificing like something important to you. Maybe it's your freedom, maybe it's your time, like whatever it is, for the benefit of others. So I needed to find a community that understood that. And I slowly realized that it was like Christian communities that were going to be like living the way that I thought we ought to live in a way that's generative. Because those other values are degenerative. They weren't, it wasn't building, you know, it wasn't like moving forward. And yeah, that, I don't know. I'd say those are the top level things, but there were a million little things that were making me realize those communities weren't the right ones to like put my stake in the ground and stay, you know?
Do you feel like it was a lesson you had to learn though?
Oh, absolutely. Because I wouldn't have, it's kind of like, maybe not everybody's like this, but I really needed to go see the opposite of what I was raised with to like even see.
Well, it's kind of like the Amish kicking their kids out for a year, you know, type deal.
Yeah, it's like you don't know what you have. I was raised Christian. It was cool, but I didn't know what.
Oh, so it's like in a sad '80s song. You don't know what you got until it's gone.
Yeah, and you know, it helped me to be able to like articulate it, which is nice. Always feel like I needed people to be able to articulate why we do things the way we do them, and nobody around me really was doing that. So I needed to kind of figure that out. So no, it was all very important lessons, but I still see like young people falling into some of the traps of thinking that, you know, yeah, these like perverse communities are good for them. And yeah, it's, we all need that. It's funny. Like I even like every Sunday would go to the park and meet up with the circus people. And that was my like son. And it was Sundays, like almost like we're built for like a Sunday ritual. Right.
It was just ritualistic.
Mm-hmm.
But have you read Marriage and Family Life by St. John Chrysostom? It's like three homilies.
Isn't it kind of short?
It's small. It's like 80 pages.
Yeah.
So I read the first homily not that long ago. I ended up lending it to a friend before I could read the other two homilies in it. But one of the things that like really struck my attention in the first homily was when he started getting into slavery and slavery and freedom. And so he's kind of making the comparison that you intentionally bonded yourself to this marriage rather than strike out on the freedom of sleeping around and being,
promiscuous.
Thank you. I needed that word. I was looking for it. Yeah. He's there somewhere. So he makes that comparison, and he's saying sometimes the slave is freer than the free man. And this is something that I just recorded a podcast a few weeks ago about this exact thing, about how freedom isn't necessarily the bondage you feel. Oh, when I talked to Joseph Shambra,
yeah.
So we had this conversation about like that bondage that freedom delivers. That you feel like you're in chains when you're addicted to drugs, or you're an alcoholic, or you're a sex addict, or whatever it is. That this is a type of bondage, and sometimes enslaving yourself to a higher power, to Christ, to these higher standards is actually better for you. And this is kind of how St. John Chrysostom like discussed marriage. in the first homily, he was like, you tie yourself to that person and you make yourself a slave to that person where they own you and you own them, so that everything is done in a way to keep you in line so that you can benefit spiritually in the long run. And I thought that was a really interesting, because it was something that I was like right on the tip of. I was kind of trying to find the balancing act for. I was trying to figure out. And it sounds like that's a lot what you're saying, is these people have had turned so free, let's say, hedonistic in a way, that it was actually enslaving them. And it was like controlling them. It was contorting their whole lives. It was so unnatural that it was destroying them. And you recognize this and you're like, okay, I got to get out of this situation. And when you looked at the Orthodox Christianity that actually bonded themselves and forced themselves into this service of one another, that you found an actual type of freedom.
Yes, it's a total paradox. It's very hard to comprehend. But the other way that I realized this is that the community I was living in was very like pro open borders. And I realized that the only place I was like truly free was like the walls of my own home. So like I wasn't free out on the streets, because the streets were so free that it was a free for all, right? It was like crime and drugs and like people coming from all over the world, and there was theft and organized crime rings and all these things, because it was so free, right? And the only place I was truly free was in the walls of my own home, because there was a boundary there. So the boundaries created the container for my actual freedom. So freedom needs a container. And like you said, or like a bondage to something else, like something like constraints create freedom. It's very hard to understand. So I spent years as a libertarian that just thought like you had to cast off all bonds and cast off any sort of higher authority in order to be the most free, and that that was what was spiritually best. But it's not true. It's very strange to realize, because it is a paradox. But it was, yeah, that's exactly right. That's what I found in the Orthodox, or in Christianity in general. It's like you are becoming like subservient to higher moral order, to higher principles, to like metaphysical principles. Like patience isn't like something you can touch with your hands. But if you make yourself like subservient to it, then when you are fasting, you can be patient. You can develop that and grow yourself spiritually by being subservient to like a higher order. So yeah, that's really what it came down to, is just realizing that we needed some sort of structure. And I mean, I feel like I was living in liberal cities for like most of my adult life, and they're very like all about getting rid of constraints and boundaries. In a way, they aren't, because if you like step out of the bounds of what they think is acceptable, they like totally cancel you or whatever. But a lot of their philosophy is about like casting off any sort of constraints or authority or just anything that would like constrain you in any way. But you live like that for a while and you see that it's just kind of entropy. Like it's just, you're kind of just going into the void, you know. It doesn't like actually produce anything. It doesn't grow you. And then there's no structure. There's no container in which your soul can grow. And I think if you're a person with a growth mindset, you eventually figure that out. And you like, even like for a while, my spiritual practice was like Buddhism, essentially like meditating. Right. And I would meditate. And the whole point of meditating is to like observe your thoughts and to detach. And I was realizing that as a spiritual practice, that it wasn't going to get me anywhere, because it didn't give me any framework for how to live once I stepped off my yoga mat, right? It's like, okay, I've let go, you know, and I've detached. But nobody builds anything in civilization by being detached. Like the people that built the most beautiful churches and buildings, some of them didn't even live to see them finished. Like, you know, it's not about being so attached to an outcome that you create suffering. I think outcomes are up to God, and you try your best and then you accept whatever the outcome is. But to be non-attached, like to have that as your higher order spiritual principle, like in Buddhism and the New Age, to let go of attachments, like that, then it's nihilism. It's like, why care? Then you don't care about anything. You know, what are you, why build anything? Why try? Like, why do anything if your whole goal is to be non-attached? So like I said, it's like, in a sense, I think being unattached to outcomes, you want to shoot for outcomes while being unattached to them happening, like, because it might not happen. That's okay. But to make non-attachment your goal, the way that you like operate, I think there's a way to be equanimous about life and accept that things are always changing without becoming a nihilist, right? Like, without deciding that my spiritual practice is all about like just being an observer and not being really in something. So, and even with marriage, you know, it's like you're in it, right? You're not, like, non-attachment is not the goal there, right?
Right.
And there's healthy and unhealthy attachment, but you know, just in general, I was realizing that this whole like casting off process, we're going to cast off boundaries, we're going to cast off authority, we're going to just make ourselves as free as possible, was just a total dead end. It's like the only way to explain it. So
when you recognize this, how long did it take you for you to break those bonds? Was that something difficult for you? Because it was kind of the community that you had buried yourself in, and you were looking for a community.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard. And there was a period of time where, well, honestly, I'm really grateful to God that he gave me a twin sister, because I sort of had a companion on this journey. But yeah, it was hard to like have to leave and rebuild. And really, like, the whole place where this was happening was in a place where I knew, like, at the back of my mind, didn't make sense for the long haul anyway. Like, American urban centers are very transient places. Like, the average person there isn't there for the long haul. You can't afford property. The average person can't afford property. You have to be very rich. The high population urban life starts to kind of grate on you, and you end up wanting more space or whatever. I mean, I guess some people stay in environments like that for their whole lives, but a lot of people are transient and they're just there to get like career experience or find a spouse and leave or something. There is an aspect where it was like not that hard, because I was like, okay, I'm ready to go like invest somewhere where that's feasible and makes sense. Because unless you're like raking in a lot of cash in San Francisco, you're not going to be able to like put your stake in the ground and like buy a house. You know, people do it, but I knew that I didn't work in like high tech. I wasn't going to be able to do that. But then there was like a period of, I don't know though, like maybe I'm just very social, but there was a period of kind of like, okay, I don't have any friends and I need to like make new friends. But then, like, it kind of is like a ball rolling down. What is the analogy with like a snowball rolling down a hill and it keeps like gathering as it goes?
I'm being attacked.
Oh, by dogs?
Yeah. Have you not met my dogs?
I definitely have. You're on Zoom.
Oh God.
down.
Yeah.
They miss you.
Baby, can you come get the dogs, please? No, she's cooking.
She can't.
She's like, no.
Sentence smoothie.
No, she's making some sort of pasta.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Okay, lock me in. I'm a prisoner in my own office.
Yeah, so I don't know. It was hard and not hard. Like, it had to be done. And I found people who were coming from the same place as me, who were kind of like coming out of the left wing, like, ethos. And figuring this stuff out too, and I made friends. A lot of them were online though. Finding an in real life community is harder. Like, internet communities kind of coalesce. But you need people in real life too. That can be challenging, but that's also good for your spiritual growth, because like online you can cultivate a community of super like-minded people, but in real life you're gonna have people where you like butt heads, or like they're a little difficult sometimes, or like whatever, and all of that stuff grows you as well. Back to the concept of things not being perfect, like that's good for you when things aren't perfect.
Well, iron sharpens iron, so that conflict can help. And it's, you know, I was raised Baptist, and one of the things I didn't get out of the Baptist mindset that I have found in Orthodoxy is they seemed very hesitant to admit that they had flaws.
Oh, interesting. How so?
Right. Well, so
individual people.
Yeah. It was like you would see them on Sundays when you went to church and they were all buttoned up and everything was so perfect. And, you know, I'm walking in, you know, ticked off at, you know, my now ex-wife that, you know, she was sleeping around, and like there was all this stuff going on. And I'm like looking at them and they're like, y'all are presenting yourselves as everything is so perfect. Maybe I don't belong here. Maybe my life is so chaotic and so out of whack that I don't belong in this atmosphere. And in Orthodoxy, I haven't found that. I've found people that are very open with their spiritual struggle and willing to discuss the struggles of life and how they are attacking, you know, their problems. And I know back in the day, there used to be public confession, like confession was done in public, and it was done like that in a way so that people could relate and they didn't feel like alone in these battles. At least that's the way I read it. And in Orthodoxy, I find that a lot. There are people I can talk to about different things, different ideas, different thoughts, and not feel like I'm kind of an outsider. It's like, no, we're all dealing with these same types of temptations and passions and different problems. And having that foundation to kind of build upon as far as your friendship, like I'm not going to judge you because I'm dealing with the same things you're dealing with. Like that creates these strong, really strong bonds.
Yeah. So that's so funny that you say that, because when I was in the New Age communities, it was the same thing. And the way that I used to put it is I felt like no one was being honest with me about their shit. Like, and by that, I mean, like when I talk with people, it was all like, everything's great. Oh, yeah, it's good. Oh, yeah. It was always just the positive. And I was like, wait a minute. Everybody has shit. Everybody has stuff that they're frustrated with, that they're dealing with, that they're struggling with. And if you never share that with me, then like, how do we connect? Like it's good to share the positive stuff. That's all good. But life contains light and dark. So if you only are focused on the light, and this is the thing with kind of New Ageism, is it's very love and light. You hear that all that, love and light, love and light. And it's like, yeah, cool. But also there's shit and darkness and struggle. And if we never acknowledge that, then it's not real. And so is that what you mean? Like people weren't honest about like the shit that was going on. They would just put on a facade that like everything was good.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it's like I have five kids, and as I was raising my kids, I would make sure I would tell them like, life's going to be hard. Like my parents always told me, life's not fair. Life's hard. Like it's a struggle. Yeah. There are things you're going to have to tolerate. There are things you're going to have to sacrifice. There are going to things you're going to have to put up with. And in the Baptist community or the non-denominational community, like depending on which church I was going to at the time, like I never found that. Like they didn't talk about that stuff. It was just like, yeah, everything's good. Thank God. And it's like, yeah, well, like, thank God, but not everything's good. We're all
struggling. Yeah.
God knows we're all struggling. You know,
that's exactly how the New Age community was. And it's weird because when I left the New Age community and I was exploring Protestant churches for a little bit, I noticed that the people there had the same look in their eyes. It's a little hard for me to explain, but it's sort of this like wide-eyed, like happy. I don't know. It's a little bit weird. Like there was something like missing, and it was a look in their eyes.
Like the Soundgarden Black Hole Sun video.
I don't know. But maybe
somebody's gonna get that.
Okay. Good. I maybe it's the right analogy because it was just kind of like a happy emptiness or something where everything was just, yeah, love and light. Everything's good. And that's not reality, you know. And I've always been drawn to people who can be honest about struggle and want to talk about the difficult things and explore the depths and the darkness. And if we can't do that, I don't know how to be close to you. Like if you're not honest with me about what you're struggling with, I don't feel close to someone, you know?
Right.
So.
Well, and when I was in the Protestant community is when I got most of the tattoos I have. And most of the tattoos I have are super dark. Super dark.
Interesting. And it was like your outlet because you didn't.
Right. Because I had nowhere else to turn with it. I wrote poetry, you know, like in my spare time, I'd write short stories and I'd get tattoos, listen to heavy metal. And, you know, that was kind of my thing, drinking and just partying, just trying to like blow off steam. And I had nowhere to turn with it. And I was getting these tattoos and I would show up to church with new tattoos and nobody would say a word.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. They'd be like, oh, God bless you. You look so good. And I'm like, no, I don't. I look like I was run over by a train because I drank a 30 pack of beer last night. I barely got out of bed this morning. Wow. Like, and I knew they were lying to me. That was the thing. I knew I was being lied to. And I was like, what is wrong with you people? You know,
it was the same thing.
And they were same time, they were asking me to teach Sunday school to teenagers. And I was really? Like, really me? Like, yeah, I have a lot of knowledge and I can interpret a lot of these things, but come on, man. Like my life is obviously in shambles. Like I'm obviously going through some stuff and you just don't want to hear it.
The parallels with the new age are weird in that regard, where it's just like people would be again with my drug addict friend. She was like obviously struggling. Nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody wanted to address it. When we did talk about it, it was, just support her and give her, you know, like it was just not like, yeah, like it sounds like you maybe needed tough love or something, you know, or just like an acknowledgement of the darkness. And it's like good to focus on gratitude and good to focus on the things that are good for sure. But I don't know, like life, there is something to the yin yang of life, right? Like where the good contains the bad contains the good. Like I think that is real. And if you're not acknowledging like one end of things, it's strange to me that Christians would be like that though, because. And I see this, yeah, in Protestant circles, like just from what I see online or like videos where it does seem to be very like, it almost has, some of it almost has like a cheesy aspect to it, where it's all like the Protestant rock concerts and stuff. They almost end up being cheesy. And I think it's because there's no like edge there of acknowledging the darkness in a way that's like real. It's just all like, oh, it's great. Oh, please God. Blah, blah, blah. Like it's all that side of it.
Well, that's what the bass solo is for.
That's what? What?
The bass solo is for.
Sure. I don't think it's getting the whole job done.
No, I completely get what you're saying. You're absolutely right.
That's fascinating.
And orthodoxy, I found like this kind of reality, like this understanding of reality of what life is happening to us all. And we're all dealing with these struggles and these battles. And yeah, we come from it from different outlets and different points of view and different perspectives. But the community is, from what I've found, is not judgmental in any way. They're loving, they're kind, and they're understanding. I would use my godfather as an example. When the first time I ever walked in to St. Michael's Antiochian Orthodox Church was in October of 2021. And the first guy I met there was like 6'5", had long gray hair pulled back in a ponytail, looked like a biker that just put on a suit jacket, right? Over his t-shirt. And I was like, all right. So I started talking to this big dude. Come to find out he's Lebanese, and he was cradle Orthodox. He left the church for like 30 years, and then he came back to the church as an adult and realized he needed a church. And like, we related so well and got along so well, and that whenever I was chrismated and accepted into the church, I asked him to be my sponsor, my godfather, because I was like, this guy's just awesome. Like, I just love this dude. Yep. He's a big dude. You know, he reminds me of so many of my family members, whether it's my dad, he's probably 6'3" now, but he was 6'4" and a half when I was growing up. He was a big guy. My Uncle Tommy's 6'8". My Grandpa Ralph was 6'6". Like, my whole family, I'm the run of the family. I'm 5'10", you know, like, the run. But just having that relation with him, like, immediately upon meeting, and I was like, yeah, I like this guy, because I got the long hair, the long beard, you know, and so we kind of had that in common, and understanding that I can walk in there and talk to him and be like, he may not know any other faith, he may not know any other like Christian denomination, but he does understand that, hey, I'm struggling with things, I'm just getting into this, I'm 2 years in, you know, like, trying to figure this out, you know?
Yeah. And it's like, if you have it's just nice knowing that, I don't know, the people you find in the Christian church and the Orthodox church are aware of that and trying to be better. Like, that's the whole thing. Cause I learned that when you build a community around a shared interest or activity, that isn't necessarily present. Like, people in my community were trying to get better at flow arts or circus arts, right? That was what they were striving towards, which, cool, that's an aspect of my life still, trying to get better at my dance practice. But that, I realized I couldn't build, like, that couldn't be the foundation of my community, because you need, like, these shared values about that, where you're trying to improve your own soul and improve your relationships with others, and just improve your life and the lives of those around you, and have a duty to those around you. Like, that has to be the focus. So my dance instructor would always say, shared interests don't mean shared values. So the thing with the people you meet in the Orthodox church is, like, you have those shared values, and then there's variance as far as people's interests and, you know, the things they like to do. But because the values are shared, that's what makes for a really strong community. It's actually good, even if we have different interests, right? It's like, I always think about the whole, like, the concept of the body of Christ, and how, like, you know, it's like, you don't need like 10 eyeballs. You need 2 eyes and a liver, right? And, like, we're all serving different purposes. And then the whole body works. So, but there's that shared, like, underlying core of, acknowledging the light and the dark, trying to be better, trying to help one another be better, kind of that social accountability aspect too. Cause I realized living in cities that there was no social accountability really. Like I gave that example of my friend who, her boyfriend went off on a trip and was like messing around with another woman, but there was no accountability for him. And I found that just living in cities and like urban communities that weren't Christ-centered, there wasn't accountability, because it was like, people weren't there for the long haul. They were probably going to move. People didn't share values, so there was no social enforcement of behavior. Like, you need, there's something about like a small community or a community with shared values where, like, if somebody's acting up, people set them straight. Like, for example, I'll give you an example, like, and maybe you're not, I don't know how familiar you are with like modern dating culture, but people talk a lot about ghosting, right? That's when like you're dating someone or you're talking to them and then they just one day totally stop responding to you. And then people are very hurt by that behavior. Well, how did ghosting become a thing? It's a modern phenomenon in the digital age. Well, it's because there's no social accountability in an actual community. If you were dating somebody and then they just randomly stopped speaking to you, other people would be like, hey, Bob, like, why are you treating Susan that way? Like, she says you haven't talked to her in 2 weeks and you guys were going out and this and that. Like, he wouldn't get away with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But in the modern world where we're not like really in real communities and we're not embedded in like a social structure, people can get away with really crappy behavior. And that's how you get things like, that's how you get promiscuity and stuff too, right? Because like in a small or tight-knit community or community with shared values, like if you're sleeping around, people will talk about it. You can't really like get away with it. You know, it'll be socially enforced through, you know, just the community aspect of shame or whatever it is, people knowing about it. So there's something with like the anonymity and of the digital age where we can kind of like retreat into our little atomized cells of individuality that you just, there's no pressure on you to be a better person. You know, like that's such an important aspect of a church is that there's like eyeballs on you, you know, people know you and they know what you're going through and they know what you're struggling with. And if you get out of line, like maybe, you know, there's people you can like work it out with, you know?
Mm.
So I don't know.
No, you're absolutely right on that. And, you know, I was thinking about it just now too. I was talking about going to a Baptist church and non-denominational church. And it was like, these were only my friends on Sunday. Like I didn't talk to these people during the week. Like I didn't spend any time with, one of the churches I went to, a couple of the churches I went to, I would know people outside of church before I started attending that church.
Okay.
And therefore we had that relationship already built. For the most part, most of the people I didn't see like outside of church. It was like, nope, like you're a church friend. Like that's it. You're some guy. I barely remember your name. I know you by your face and I say hi to you. And I don't even say hi, Bob, because I can't remember if your name's Bob or Rob, you know? So.
Yeah. And like, I think maybe there are always going to be people that like, just attend church as like a duty. I saw this a lot in the Catholic communities where it was like just a box to check so that you don't go to hell or something. like, oh, I did my duty and now I'm done, you know, or I got communion and now I'm done. And it wasn't really about being like embedded in the social aspect or like really getting to know somebody and being there for them. So, and I think people are like, allergic to that these days. Like people don't want to be like bothered and I don't know, like they don't want to have any demands placed upon them through which is what can happen when you forge social connections. Like people might need help or they might need a hand or like whatever it is, you know, and then there's demands placed upon you and people like don't like that. So we have this like individualistic, like leave me alone, I want to do what I want to do sort of culture. And a church is sort of like antithetical to that, you know, you go there and you should be there for people and help people that need help. And so, yeah, that's interesting though, because I haven't spent a lot of time in Protestant circles. So, but what you describe sounds a lot like the New Age communities I was in. So those are like spiritual communities and they have some like spiritual practices and stuff. And they have some ritual or maybe they meet every Sunday at the same place and do their mm-hmm. shared activity. But it was a similar thing where like, I didn't feel like I could call them if I needed help moving a couch or something. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like, I didn't really feel like people wanted to be there for me. And it just got that sense. So there's something about orthodoxy. Like it does have that focus on suffering, which I think my first couple of years, I was like, all we talk about is suffering. And like, aren't we supposed to enjoy life too? But like the fact that that is a focus is good because then if that's on your mind, then you know that other people are suffering too and they have their struggles. And I would always do this thing where I'd like hallucinate that other people had a perfect life. And I'm like, oh, they've got it great. They don't have any problems. Like, I'm like, you know, and I only like in the last year have I been like, stop doing that. Like, cause I would like reject that somebody had a perfect life, and then I'd find out like some difficult thing they're going through, you know? Yeah. So everybody has something. But if all you're focused on is like the positive side of things, it's just, yeah, it's just, it's not reality. And then how are you going to like really be there for people if like that's your mindset? Like you said, these people at your church that were just kind of like, oh, on Sundays and everything's great, la, la, la. It's like, that ain't real, you know? So,
well, and yeah, if that is what your life is, then what do you and I have in common? You know, like,
yeah, that's, yeah, exactly.
So I cannot relate to that, you know? So,
exactly. Yeah. It's true.
I want to cover one more like short topic. Okay. It can be as long as you want it to be, but before we get off here, but I wanted to ask you, because you said like you benefited from having a twin and entering the church together with a twin. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that you and your twin is as alike as y'all are, which I'm sure is plenty alike. Mm-hmm. Y'all don't necessarily always feel the exact same way. So how important is it that you have this kind of not only bond to your twin, but kind of a responsibility to Amy, that you don't feel like going to church sometimes, but you go to be with her or maybe other people in the church, that you feel a responsibility to the community of your church, that it pulls you out of bed and puts you into liturgy, and how grateful and thankful are you? Because I know there are times I don't want to get up. I'm like, no, it's Sunday. It's the only day off I have all week. I'm just going to lay here. I just want to sleep. And I make myself get up. I make myself go to church. And I'm never disappointed when I go. I'm always grateful that I went. And the only times I ever feel disappointment are the days I don't make myself go.
Yeah.
You know?
It's funny. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's like there's it's weird. Like, I sort of think about, yeah, there's days where my church starts so early too. Like, I only know of two churches where the liturgy starts at 9, but to me, that's really early, and I live a half hour from the church. Like, I'm not a morning person. Other people will laugh at me and be like, that is not early. But to me, it is. So, but yeah, it's like, I miss people if I don't go. Like, I feel, yeah, like you said, it's like I feel worse if I don't, or as bad as it feels sometimes to like get up and get out of bed and do that. I know that I miss people when they're not there. Like, and I'm like wondering where they are, and I like wish they were there because I love them, you know?
Or are they okay?
Whatever it is. So it's like very human and important, I think, to see the same faces regularly and to like keep an eye on each other or whatever. But it's like having that, I think the thing with having a twin is more that I've had a sort of life hack of being able to be exploratory and let go of things that aren't good because I had a buddy going with me. Like, maybe it would have been harder to detach from the New Age community if I didn't have a buddy to exit it with me and go on to the next thing. Kind of like that. Even like, that's always been the case too. Like, even in grade school, it was like, I didn't feel any issues standing up to bullies because I knew I always had a friend, right? It's not like I'm like, I've never had that same fear that I think singletons probably have of not having a tribe. Like, I've had a built-in like buddy, so I could take more risks. I don't know. I'm not a singleton, so I don't know. Like, to what
you just dropped singleton twice, and you know what? This is the first time I've ever heard that outside of somebody's last name.
Yeah, it's what we call it. Yeah, I said that word once, and somebody goes, "I didn't know that twins had a derogatory term for non-twins." I was like, "It's not derogatory. It's a medical term." It's like an actual term. Yeah.
It's like, it's like calling people that don't want, like, don't keep up with politics normies. I'm like,
yeah.
I guess.
I could try the other one's like single birth person, but that sounds clunky.
No, I like singleton. That works. That's awesome. I think that's the first time I've ever heard that used, though.
Yeah. You didn't even know you were a singleton, but
I didn't even know.
Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of what I, you know, that's kind of been my experience of being a twin, is that I have like backup, so I can kind of be higher in openness and explore things. I know someone's like doing that with me. But yeah, then there's also the aspect of, yeah, like, it's true. Like, in the morning sometimes, because we live together, it's like, I'm tired. I don't want to get up. But I heard Amy get up. So, like, I'm going to get up and go to church, you know? And it's like, if it was just me, would I have that inner drive to, like, do what I know I need to do? And maybe that's the whole concept of the church community, too. It's like, you can't do this alone. You know, you need to know other people are on that journey with you. Or striving with you to motivate, it like motivates you, something like that.
Well, and knowing that, like, if I, and I'm not saying I make perfect attendance, cause I don't, and knowing that the day I don't go to church, I'm going to hear from about three or four people via text message. And I'm like, okay, I better just suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah. Cause
you know, I'm not only letting myself down, I'm letting other people down. And yeah, they're just like, hey man, is everything going okay? It's like last year, Beatrix got bit by a copperhead. My son got shot, ended up having to have like reconstructive surgery on his arm. And I let that be an excuse for me to wallow in my own self-pity and not go to church for a few Sundays. And people that knew what was going on were texting me like, hey dude, you all right? Is everything okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm all right. I just gotta get out of this little funk I'm in, because I'm just feeling sorry for myself like a total noob. So
well, I don't know. Like, tell me if you're this way or not. I find that if I'm upset or like not well, the last thing that is good for me is retreating from people. But I know a lot of people's instinct is to withdraw when something's wrong. But I try to not do that, because I know that that'll just make it worse. There's just something about like other people being in the shit with you, or at least listening, or like just being there, or whatever, that like makes all that stuff easier. So I don't know. Are you the type that like withdraws when things are hard? Or
I mean, I withdraw when things are good. So like, I'm very much like, you wouldn't know it by listening to my podcast, but I'm such an introvert. Like, my entire life is I go to work, and when I get home, I go sit on my front porch and I stare, watch the grass grow.
Cool.
Like, that's my life. I watch the chickens run around. Like, that's it. And so I'm perfectly satisfied in that space, that even my wife is like, hello, I need your attention.
And I'm like, wow.
And I mean, she's 5 feet from me, and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. Like, there's somebody else here.
Wow.
So that's just who I am. That's always been my personality. So it's very easy for me to, yes, retreat within my own world and just forget anything else exists. I must have sat outside for 2 hours the other day and stared at the oak tree next to my driveway, and just examining how green and beautiful it was. Like, I'm fine with that. Like, that's my safe space. Yeah. You know,
it's not a bad quality. In fact, I wish I could be like a little more like that. I kind of lose my mind if I'm not extremely social. Like, I only need like 2 hours of alone time a week, probably.
Yeah.
Like, I am hyper social. So I'm a little bit, it's not that I can't just sit and do nothing. It's just that I prefer to be around people. It's not that even that I'm, it's not that I'm trying to like escape myself either. Like, I can be alone and I just don't prefer it. Mm. I like activity and stimulation and banter and people. So then that's interesting. So like for you.
Well, it's also difficult for me too, because I was over the road truck driver for many years.
You're used to being alone.
So being alone is like just the natural habitat for me, you know, after doing that for so long. And when I would do that, I would go over the road for like 2 weeks. I'd be by myself. My wife would call me every night. We'd talk for a little bit, and then I'd go to bed. I'd get up in the morning and I'd just be driving, listening to audiobooks and just kind of observing the scenery and enjoying the world. And when I would come home after a couple of weeks, her and I would sit on the front porch and just bullshit and drink beer for 2 days straight. We wouldn't do anything else. We would sit there and just spend time together. But now that I work locally, I work for a retail company and I'm engaging with people every day. Mm-hmm. It's actually very difficult for me to adapt to deal with that. Oh. And so by the end of the day, I'm so mentally tired from yep. dealing with people that I'm like, just leave me alone.
I could see that. So then, so do you find a lot of benefit in the social aspect of church, or is it sometimes difficult? Like,
I do, but it's like, it can't be more than two people at a time.
Mm-hmm.
If there's like a group of people standing around talking, I'm not going to enter into that.
Oh, interesting.
I'll stand outside of that and I'll talk to my buddy who I have a really good friend I go to church with, and we're real close. We text all the time. He's an ex-cop and he's former military. So he and I get along great. He works as a park ranger now. And so like I'll sit and I'll chat with him. We'll talk, you know, but I won't engage in that large group of people. That's just okay. That is so far yeah. outside of who I am. I'll stand yeah. there and I'll just watch. And when somebody talks to me, I'll talk to that person. But yeah. like it's yeah. like I can't do the big crowd thing.
I'm totally the opposite. But I'm Italian, so I'm just like people, more people, let's go. Like I'm like it's in my blood, I think.
My mom's like that. My mom yeah. loves that. And I'm outspoken, much like my mom is, but I have yeah. that introverted kind of like dynamic that my dad has. And it's just like I'll just give me a book. Let me watch some grass grow, you know, play some poetry and some classical music, and I'm good. I'm like, all right, yeah. I don't need anything.
I think one of the ways that like the social aspect of church is helpful is that it's kind of like, it kind of forces me, and I'm not an expert at this at all, and I have a long way to go, but it like forces me to think about someone other than myself. Like, it's too easy to just like, I don't know, do what's good for me. But if I'm in a community, it's like, you see, it forces me to think like, how can I be useful to other people? And I could be much more useful than I am. But I think there's also like, if I feel like, yeah, like immersing myself in the community, not only do I get a lot of just pleasure out of socializing, just because I think it's fun and I like people and I like their stories, but I think there's also a part of me now that like wants to get ingrained with people because if I could be useful to them, that's like good for me to like be less selfish and like see ways that people need help. And again, I'm not like great at this. And I think probably still most of my life is, you know, helping myself, but like I still want to grow in that and be better about that. Like I've had friends that have really shown me like what it means to be like generous or to think about someone else first. And it made me realize just how like bad I have been at that. Like just thinking about someone else first, just like what they might want or doing something thoughtful for them. You know, I met people who are so good at that and I really want to grow in that. So kind of like forcing myself to be in a community and really immersed in it is helping me to get better at that. I still have a long ways to go. But like that aspect of church and like showing up every week and people keeping tabs on you, right? It's like, it's good for me to have a sort of like a sense of duty there, if that makes sense. Whereas if I wasn't there that often, if I was there like once every 3 months or something, not only would I not have the opportunity to be like duty bound to anybody, but people wouldn't be duty bound to me, you know? So it's kind of this like give and take sort of symbiotic thing. And that's a totally different thing than your level of extroversion or introversion, by the way. It's just all that's just to say that like it's good that people notice when you're not there and want to like keep tabs on you and make sure you're okay. You know, it's a very good thing. A lot of people don't have that, you know?
Well, it's funny because I might be in a lot of ways the exact opposite of you, because though I'm an introvert and I just want to be like wrapped, like completely like in silence and just kind of zoned out, I have like this real heart of service and I love doing for other people.
Yeah.
And, I found myself in a situation a few weeks ago where I was able to help some young kid out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the expression on the kid's face whenever I was able to help him, he was like, I didn't even know you knew who I was, because I am so closed off, like, that I don't like express myself very often. And so it felt good to do that. And so I think we're all getting something out of that ability to be involved in that and give and learn. And that brings you closer, because then it's like, oh, okay. Like, this person isn't what I thought they were. This person isn't the crotchety old bastard that I thought he was, you know, like, because that is a lot of times how I come off. Like, yeah, okay, hey, how are you?
Well, it's easy to sort of like profile people. Like, I'm sure people do profile you that way. I think people probably profiled me as being like stuck up or something, you know, I don't know. But like, and then it's, oh, I thought she was this way. But then I said, no, she's not. But it's good to like know and be known, right? And you kind of have to crack the surface with people, and you need some sort of way to like facilitate that. And like, church is very, I get upset when there are people that like come to church but never come to coffee hour, because I'm like, I want to know you. I want to know who you are. Like, why don't you come to coffee hour? There's like a young family that comes to church, not every week, but sometimes. And I just want to know who they are and like talk to them and like have them be a part of the thing, but they never come to coffee hours. So, I don't know. Just like, and I'm sure they're not who I think they are. Right. Like, I can just look at the surface level and I'm like, oh, they're so put together and this, that, but they probably have their struggles and they have their stuff that they have to give, which is probably not even what I would think it is. You know, like everybody's different. And it's nice to know people like that.
I had a guy give me a hug last week, shake my hand, give me a hug, call me brother. And I don't know his name.
Yeah.
Because it's a young couple that's been coming to the church, and I've said hi to them, and they always sit like right behind me. So I'm there and I'll turn and I'll see them. Hey, how are y'all doing? We haven't even exchanged names, like, but they're, you know, and so sometimes it's just that little bit. Sometimes that little bit that'll lead that person to the coffee hour at some point.
Yeah, that's true. And I try to like, I think I've kind of tried to be that person where if someone is new, I try to like find them at the end of learning and be like, hey, do you live around here? What's your story? Blah, blah, blah. Hoping to like invite them, because maybe people feel like they need the invite, you know, like they need someone they can talk to once they get down there that they've connected with. I say down there because our coffee hour is in a basement. Yeah, it's good. Like, I always remember the people that did that for me. You know, they recognized that I was new and they're like, hey, come to coffee hour. Who are you? Blah, blah, blah. So it's good to be that person. But it does take a level of like being comfortable breaking the ice, which I've also had to learn, because I've had a tendency to be like, people don't want to hear from me. I'm not going to bother. I don't want to bother people. You know, I've had to like kind of force myself to be like, no, bother people. They're not going to feel bothered. Like, they'll just perceive it as like warmth and invitational. So
there was an old man that I went to church with. He just passed away here recently, and they called him the church historian. I mean, it wasn't like his like designated title, but that's what they called him. And if there was a new person that showed up to church, he would go sit with that person and he would talk them through the liturgy, and he would explain everything that was going on.
Yeah.
He must have been in his late 80s, 90s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. And he just passed away here recently. And one of my good friends at church is a guy that was his godson. And we talk a lot about him, because the first time I went to church, I had already been like watching Lord of Spirits. I'd already been reading books. I was already like thinking about this. I had been examining Orthodoxy for a while. And I started asking him questions, and he got so excited that people around us were like, shh. And so the next time I went, I felt so embarrassed by the first time that I was like, no, you can't, don't worry about sitting with me, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Aww.
He and I developed a really close relationship. He was a really good guy. And I know that the priest in my church said, now that he's gone, we're going to need those people that are going to go to the new people.
Yeah.
That are going to say hi to those new people and make them feel welcome, because we're Antiochian. We're supposed to be hospitable. Yeah. And it's like, all right. Like,
yeah.
So I always try to remember that and at least shake a hand and, hey, nice to see you. How are you? I'm Tommy. Like, where you come from? I don't have a lot of experience here, just like you don't. So, you know, let's just, you know, have a conversation and see where it goes. And I've tried to remember that that helps a lot, knowing that people want to feel welcome. They want that to feel like they belong. They want that sense of community.
Yeah.
And there are too many places that people go that they don't feel welcome. The body of Christ is not one of those places that it should be filled that way.
Right. Exactly. Well said. I don't even think I can follow that.
You got anything you want to add before we end this?
No, I think this is good though. Good topic. Not one I something I've thought about a lot, but never actually like talked about in depth like this on a show. So I appreciate the invite and the thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna have two more on this topic. I got Dissident Mama I'm recording with next week, and the week after that I'm recording with Rachel Wilson. So we're going to dig into some community aspects of Orthodoxy and the importance of community for women and how that can not only benefit the women, but also kind of show them their role and vibe in them this confidence of engaging in the church when their husbands go crazy and dive in. So,
yes, I think one other thing I'll say about it is there can be like almost like overly zealous online Orthodox people that are very obsessed with the right way to live and how to be the most perfect trad, whatever it is, person. And going to a church really can like break you out of that, because you see that people have all different situations. They have all different life situations. They have all different struggles. They have all different like things that they have, things that they lack, like strengths, weaknesses, like gifts, like discrepancies, like whatever it is. And it kind of breaks you out of this sort of like ideology that I can see happening sometimes in online Orthodoxy of like this hubristic perfection or ideal. I saw a lot with like very trad people. Like you're just worthless if you're over 30 and unmarried and you don't have 10 kids and you don't have cows and chickens and right, like that kind of thing, which I think is really toxic.
I had chickens before I was Orthodox. Thank you very much.
Yeah, fine. But like it's a reaction against modernity, which like I get, but there's also just so many different situations, and going to church and being in that community helps me at the end of the day to just have compassion for people. For me to be, it compels me to be better, and it helps me to have compassion for all the different difficult situations and life situations that people face. So I think I'll end on that.
Okay. Where can we find you and Amy?
Well, we have the Mystic Sisters podcast. We're on Substack and YouTube. If you type in Mystic Sisters Twins, it should come up. And then I'm also on Twitter, and my handle is Julie Writes.
Julie Writes. What are you writing?
Well, I write a lot about media bias. Lately, I've been podcasting more than writing, though. I need to change my handle to like Julie Talks.
Yeah, let's give your sister a plug for her iconography.
Yeah. Yes. She actually just finished a really beautiful icon of St. Susanna. But yeah, she's an iconographer. She writes beautiful icons, and she's Amy the Artist on Twitter and Instagram, and I believe her website is also Amy the Artist, but she's open for commissions, and she does really beautiful works. Like if you have a favorite saint and you want an icon, she does a really good job. So
I'll be in touch with her pretty soon, I'm sure.
Sweet. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to stop the recording.
Okay. Thanks, Tom.
Yes, ma'am.